This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program where each time we take a trip back in time and listen to stories from our greatest generation. The idea is that no matter where your hometown might be in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small it is, there are heroes around you. There are men and women who have done a lot more than you realize for the sake of freedom. That freedom that we enjoy every day and often take for granted. So every time we visit with a veteran of World War II, we want to preserve his stories for posterity, make sure he knows how much we appreciate his service and sacrifice, and along the way be educated about what life was like back then and glean some of those lessons that are still relevant today. That's the idea today with 92-year-old Harry Mercer of Tulare, California, but originally from a small town in Montana. How big was the spot where you grew up?
About 18,000 people when I was a kid in high school.
And that's a big city in Montana in 1940s. That's Missoula, where the University of Montana is.
Right.
What was life like growing up as one of five children in hunting and fishing country up in the Northwest?
Well, you pretty well named it. That was our whole life was centered around hunting and fishing and going to school and playing baseball and basketball, etc. It was a wonderful life. I'm very sorry that my grandchildren never have a chance to experience that.
Well, maybe you'll have to get them up there sometime. You can take them to the national headquarters of the Boone and Crockett Club there in the old train station in Missoula. There's a lot to see on the walls there. I've been there. Did you, as you were growing up, a teenager, a high schooler there in Missoula, did you have an idea of what you wanted to do with your life and where you were going to go?
None whatsoever, although I wanted to be a doctor. But in those days, you didn't have advisors that knew what they were doing or really cared. And when I graduated from high school and went to University of Montana, I found out that I had to go back to school for a couple more years before I could qualify for a pre-med course. And, of course, that knocked that into a cocked hat. So I quit school at the end of 2 years. I accepted a job with Pacific Fruit and Produce Company, and they were smart enough. They were looking for young undergraduates. They didn't want graduates because they'd have to pay them too much. And they wanted to take the young kids and put them into their system and teach them their own expertise. And they did that with me. Started out for 60 cents an hour for Pacific Fruit and Produce Company for 6 months. And at the end of 6 months, they kept their word. They took me out of the warehouse and hauling watermelons and sacks of potatoes around. And they put me in a nice little sedan delivery and gave me $40 a week. When I started out, I was making $18 a week. But they raised me to $40 a week, gave me a clothing and a food allowance. And boy, I had money cut out of my ears.
I guess so. That was a lot of money back then. But there couldn't have been all those crops in Missoula. Where was that you had to move?
It was in Marshfield, Oregon. Coos Bay, Oregon at that time. My wife and I were married there, and our first child was born in Coos Bay. And we've been back almost every year ever since till last year. I lost my wife in September. I don't do much traveling anymore. But I've had a wonderful life.
Well, and let me ask you about that. Did you meet your wife there in Coos Bay?
No. I met my wife in Missoula, Montana, in the middle of winter. And the Lions Club always flooded a vacant lot with water and to make a skating rink for the local kids. And I was skating with a bunch of friends of mine, and we were playing Snap the Whip. And I was at the end of the whip, and they snapped me, and I sailed across that ice at about 50 miles an hour and caught my wife. I didn't know her, but all of a sudden, she was in front of me, and I hit her full blast. I knocked her down, knocked her out completely. She was unconscious. The first person she saw when she came up was my face above her, and she wanted to do nothing but punch me. But I talked her into going out on a date with me the next night, as a matter of fact. And on that date, I had an old Model A Ford, and she was sitting there alongside of me. And after we'd gone to dinner and went to a show, and I was entranced with her. I'd never seen anybody like Gemma before or since. And I told her then, I said, "You might as well get used to seeing me because I'm going to marry you." And she looked at me like I was crazy. And of course, she didn't believe me. But 2 years later, we were married. And both young kids didn't know what was going on, really, except that we loved each other. And we had 72 years of marriage together. People laugh, but we never had a fight. We had some disagreements, but my mother and dad were special people, and so were hers. And they talked to us when we just told them we wanted to get married. And they asked us to try to duplicate their marriages, both my parents and her parents, because they had been married for a number of years and got along very well. They were wonderful people. And so we adopted the policy. If one of us had a problem, we'd write it down and give the other one a note telling her or him what the problem might be. And then we'd sit and talk about it. And we were never, ever able not to resolve our question, and always ended up, well, we had five children, so you knew we got along pretty well.
I guess so, and I'm glad I asked that question. I don't know if I've ever had an answer quite like that to how you met your wife. You knocked into her on the ice and knocked her out cold. That's a new one, but I guess it's a good thing it worked out that way. And you two got married just a few months before the whole world changed a little bit. You guys were still newlyweds when you heard about the attack on Pearl Harbor?
We were married 4 months before Pearl Harbor, and we were living in Marshfield, Oregon, or Coos Bay. The week following Pearl Harbor, a Japanese submarine surfaced off Coos Bay and sank a lumber freighter there and lobbed shells into the Coos Bay Harbor. We woke up one morning and all kinds of, we lived up on a hill overlooking Coos Bay, and we heard this terrible racket and looked out the window, and they were setting up a machine gun emplacement in our front yard overlooking the Coast Guard station, which was right down below us. They never had occasion to be attacked or anything, but they thought they were going to be. So it came home with a vengeance that we were at war. I quit my job with Pacific Fruit, and I went up to Seattle and went to work in the Navy Yard so that I would have a deferred occupation. And I worked there with my oldest brother, and we had a lot of memories of Seattle. We eventually bought a home up there. My God, you're bringing back memories I haven't thought of for many, many years.
Well, and you say deferred occupation, but that wouldn't be deferred forever. Both of you would end up serving, as well as your other brother. Three boys and two girls in your family, and all three of you boys went on to serve in the war. Who went in first among you three brothers?
He was 4 years older than I was. He went into the Air Force first, and then I was drafted, and then after I was drafted, my older brother was drafted, and we both ended up in the Navy. It was an interesting experience. My experience with Pacific Fruit and Produce Company is what got me into Navy intelligence, because there weren't too many young men who knew how to operate an electric keyboard in those days. And we had a teletype set up through Pacific Fruit that extended all up and down the Pacific coast. And I learned to use it, and that was on my application when they drafted me. I tried to enlist in the Marines, but they wouldn't have me. I had a trick knee, I had bad eyes, I had a history of asthma, so they wouldn't take me in the Marines. But the Navy offered to take me because of my experience with the teletype, and they promised me that I could go into the Navy if I would accept that, and they would waive all the physical requirements. Well, what a joke that was. I went into boot camp. I've got the picture of our group over in Farragut, training camp, Farragut, Idaho, and I went through boot camp there, and then they sent me back to Washington, D.C., and being a reporter, you probably be interested to know, where I took my training in Washington, D.C., was at the National Press Club. And the reason for that, in the second story of the National Press Club, they had the most sophisticated setup on radio and teletype and communication setup of any concern in the world. The Navy didn't have anything like it, neither did the Marines or anybody else. So they put us there to take our training on the electronic equipment. From there, I went to Bainbridge Island, Seattle. From there, I went to Hawaii, and then from Hawaii to Guam, and eventually back home. But I really had some wonderful experiences.
What was it like for you to be so young, to be married, then to become a father, to have even your second child while this whole war is going on, and while you're part of the war? Was that nerve-wracking? Did it feel like a lot of responsibility for you to have all that you're dealing with?
Well, you have to understand, back then, we had been attacked. We were fighting the Nazis in Europe, and we were fighting the Japanese in the Pacific. And it's kind of hard to realize that in this day and age, but every young man that was of an age that he could go and fight wanted to, because our country was under siege and people were being killed by other people. Well, naturally, we wanted to fight back. And I hated to leave my wife, but she was of the same opinion. She thought, yes, I should go, just like millions of other wives sent their husbands to go. It was just inconceivable that somebody would not want to go into the service and fight our enemies. So everybody did. Now, there's very few people my age that are not veterans of one or two or even three wars.
And most veterans I talk to will talk about the letters they got from their wives and how much they meant to them. In your position in Navy intelligence, I bet it was hard for you to write much of anything to her without it being censored.
It was very hard because I couldn't write anything without being censored. I filled my letters with chit-chat about what I was doing and how I felt physically, and I went to a lot of interesting places. I've always been an artist from the time I was in grade school. I used to always draw pictures of the other kids, and I mentioned the V-mail that we had available. So I never sent home a letter that I didn't have a drawing of some kind in it, and that had made it easy for my wife.
She had a little piece of you with every one of those V-mails. What about your brothers and what they were doing? Did you have any idea what they were up to, whether they were in danger or how the war was going for them?
Yes, I did. My next oldest brother was in New Zealand, and of course he wrote letters home to my mother, and she shared them always with us. And my oldest brother was sent back to the Great Lakes Naval Training Station and ended up on a destroyer escort that carried a contingent of Navy SEALs. And he came out into the Pacific, and they made landings on a succession of islands. He visited me in Guam. I was laying in my bunk, or my cot, fast asleep. We had canvas cots with mosquito netting up over them, and I woke up. I was flying through the air, and I lit on the floor with my cot on top of me, and my brother was standing there laughing like a fool. He had reached down and picked up the edge of the cot and just threw it into the air with me in it, and he thought that was really funny. He was about 7 years older than I was, so I was just a punk kid to him. But it's an interesting thing. I went down to the landing at the fleet landing and went aboard his ship, and I found out that his captain, he was a water tender aboard that little ship. The captain was depending on him to the point where he had kept it from him that he was eligible for discharge. He had more than enough points to come home, but they didn't tell him that. They were at sea most of the time, so he didn't have any way of getting that information. But anyway, I braced the captain and told him, I want my brother to go home. He's got a couple kids at home. He needs to be there. You've got no damn business keeping him here any longer. Well, he listened to me, and he got out all the papers and filled them out. And before I left there, my brother was on his way home.
So he went home before you did. And speaking of going home, and I know your brother in the Air Corps had tons of missions in B-17s and was highly decorated. When you think about the fact that all three of you were out there doing what your country asked of you, and all three of you came home, does that impress you, given how many people didn't come home?
Listen, we were tough kids. We were used to fending for ourselves, and we were lucky. There's no really any explanation why I got the ability to do what I did.
And we need to talk about what you did in the U.S. Navy in World War II. I'm glad you can talk about it now, because for so long you couldn't. But first, we need to take a break. 92-year-old Harry Mercer of Tulare, California is our guest today. Find some photos of him on our Facebook page. And don't go anywhere, because Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Our World War II veterans deserve a chance to see their memorial in Washington, D.C., and you can help send them there simply by renting a car. Between now and the end of October, visit any Enterprise Rent-A-Car location from Bakersfield in the south to Tulare, Visalia, Hanford, Selma, Fresno, Madera, Merced, all the way north to Sacramento. Tell them you heard this ad on Hometown Heroes, and Enterprise will donate 10% of your rental to Central Valley Honor Flight. Restrictions may apply. I'm sure you're familiar with Enterprise, but do you know why the largest car rental company in the U.S. is called Enterprise? The company's founder, Jack Taylor, was a decorated F-6F Hellcat pilot in World War II, flying off the deck of the Big E, the aircraft carrier USS Enterprise. Maybe I should get him on the show sometime and he can tell us how he earned the Distinguished Flying Cross. In the meantime, choose Enterprise for your next rental. Tell him you heard this advertisement on Hometown Heroes, and you'll be helping to send our World War II veterans on one more tour with honor.